If God can do anything, why does he not prevent these things? If he's truly loving, how can he allow people to suffer? But you can turn the whole question around. As a Christian, I firmly believe that God is both all-powerful and perfectly loving. And as the God who created the whole world, something which is beyond human understanding, then I have learned to accept that he has reasons beyond my understanding for all that happens, both good and bad. If God is God, then humans cannot hope to know all the answers. And I'm certainly not presuming today to give you the answer to all those questions why. But I do find enough evidence in the life of Jesus to lead me to trust in the love and provision of God, even when I cannot understand. I firmly believe that the Bible, God's word to us, has a lot to say to us about suffering, that it's very real about the challenges we all face and can help us in them. And having experienced some very dark times through a battle with cancer myself in the last 10 years, I've had to grapple with some of those why questions, and I've found peace and meaning to life. So I wanted to share some of what I've learned in the hope that it might be helpful to you. The gospel accounts of Jesus' death on the cross pull no punches. He was tortured slowly, an innocent man, condemned by an unjust authority, abandoned by friends and family, completely alone. He suffered the whole range of human emotion and an agonizing death. His words from the cross are recorded to both challenge and encourage us. They come from Psalm 22. He said, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" In the depths of his suffering, Jesus knew what it was to feel totally alone and was cruelly tortured. Why did God abandon him? Do we not hope for God to be with us in our darkest moments? Well, the reason is that in those moments, the innocent Son of God was taking the punishment that we deserve upon himself, enduring on our behalf the just judgment for our wrongdoing, so that we might have a relationship with God, that we might never feel the pain of separation from the one true God who loves us and created us. Jesus was separated from God at the moment of his death, that we might never be. And as a Christian, this brings me great comfort on several levels. Firstly, because of Jesus' words and his experience, when I endure suffering, I know that God feels and understands. In Jesus, he entered our world and endured the pain of human existence. I never have to fear that God doesn't understand. I never need to feel that he's a remote God who created us all and leaves us alone to wallow in the mess without understanding or caring. I know he understands. Secondly, Jesus' experience on the cross teaches me that God is in control, however hard we find the pain we have to see or to endure. In Jesus' death on the cross, God fulfilled his purpose to save the world. It was achieved through his sacrifice on our behalf. The suffering was part of a bigger plan, and not without reason. Because God brought about victory over death and sin when Jesus rose again after 3 days that first Easter day. And that doesn't mean to say that we can always see a purpose behind suffering, or that we can always understand what God is doing or why he's allowing it. But we can learn from what Jesus did that we can trust the God who is ultimately in control. And if I may at this point, I'd like to share something of my own story to illustrate this. 10 years ago, when I was 34 and my children were just 3 and 5, I was diagnosed out of the blue with colon cancer. And you may imagine those were shattering moments. All I could think of was that I wouldn't live to see my children grow up. And I'm really glad that we're not given the gift of reading the future, because the next 5 years were a roller coaster for us as a family. After initial major surgery, I endured 6 months of horrific chemotherapy, after which we really hoped it might all be over. But the following 2 years revealed further secondaries, tumours in my liver, which meant 2 more massive operations and a lot of pain. And in the aftermath of this, I went into a deep depression. Whilst I never ceased to believe God was there, sometimes the pain I endured and the loneliness of being ill was overwhelming. And then I was completely clear for 2 years when the blow fell again. And this time I had a massive and inoperable tumour again on my liver. And this time it really felt like the end was close. I started to contemplate heaven and plan my funeral. I firmly believed in heaven, but I didn't feel ready to leave this life and the many blessings I had in my family and friends. But I remember very distinctly one day coming out of a particularly depressing consultation with the medics and suddenly being struck with a remembrance. But God is in control. If he wants me to live, I will, and if not, then heaven is ready. And there followed another 6 months of chemotherapy to shrink the tumour and yet another dreaded liver operation, all of which was declared successful. Last week, I went for my last 5-year follow-up scan, and I've been signed off by the doctors. Truly, in many ways, a miraculous recovery. But looking back at that time, I went through particularly deep depression, as I mentioned, in the aftermath of treatment, when life felt grey and meaningless. But I was profoundly lifted by the words of a verse in the Bible that I'd always known, but never really taken in. It comes in the book of Philippians. And it says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God." Don't be anxious. How on earth can you not be anxious with those kind of things going on? But the verse concludes, "The peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus." I had done a lot of praying, and others, many others, had prayed for me with amazing results. But I'd missed the promise of peace, which follows. God calls on us to pray to him about all that concerns us, and he promises peace, not simply an answer to problems, but a miraculous peace. At that point, I didn't know if cancer was beaten or if there was more to come, but I did experience God's peace in an amazing way, because I knew he was in control of it all, whatever happened. I was able to move on, to get on with my life, not living in constant fear, because I'd learnt a very hard way, a very difficult lesson, to trust God with my life. And finally, Jesus' suffering on the cross and his resurrection the first Easter gives me hope of heaven and an end to suffering. In the book of Revelation, at the very end of the Bible, we're given a vision of heaven, and it says, "God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more, neither shall there be mourning or crying or pain." I knew, even in my bleakest moments, that by trusting in Jesus, heaven was waiting for me, that the pain would end. And the wonderful thing is that all who put their faith in Jesus are offered the same wonderful hope, whatever the extent of their pain and suffering in this life. There will be an end to that in heaven, and justice will be served as we all come before God in judgment. So those who seem to have got away with murder will be held accountable and receive justice. Things will be put right. The Hitlers of this world will not get away with what they've done. But neither will any of us. Only by trusting in Jesus' sacrifice on our behalf will we be able to stand on Judgment Day and look forward to eternal peace in heaven. So Jesus gives us wonderful hope of life to come. As Tim mentioned earlier, Jesus said, "I am the way and the truth and the life." And my experience, in a very small way, of some of the suffering this life sometimes has to offer, has shown me, beyond any doubt, that true life for now and for eternity is only to be found in him. He can grant peace that the world cannot give for today, whatever this life is throwing at us. And he gives hope of heaven for tomorrow. And if that's not something you've ever thought about, I really hope that perhaps tonight you'll give what he offers some serious consideration and talk to those around you, or by all means ask me some more questions. Thank you.
Louise, thank you very much indeed. You'll see on your tables there's some little bits of paper like that and some pencils. There's an opportunity for you to write down your question before the other two members of the panel come to the front and join me up here and ask them questions. I have nothing written on my bit of paper here. There's no planted questions at all. this is going to be your questions and nothing but your questions, and with absolute honesty and integrity is the way it's going to be. If there are no questions, there are no questions, and our panel will be very relieved. All right? But here's your chance to open it up and discuss it and think about it in a good environment to do just that. So we're going to take 2 or 3 minutes for you to think, to write your questions, and now I'll come around and pick them up. Okay. Louise, thank you. okay? Well, I ask Louise to come out to the front, and Louise is going to be joined by Raymond, Dr. Raymond. He's a member of the church here, and a local, and also Patty, who's not local. She's a foreigner. She's from America. So thank you very much indeed. So there's a microphone over there. We can share two microphones between us. I've got the questions here. These are your genuine questions, and just an opportunity here for some honest answers. Just to say that these three folks that we've got at the front here, I think there are two ways of answering the question about suffering. One is the philosophical way of asking it. You know, you're just interested in it because it's something to ask. The other way is the reality of having been through suffering, and these three aren't philosophical sufferers, these folks know, so they're thought through too, so they're a good combination. First question: why do some people get a complete battering by life and others just sail through? It's not fair! Raymond.
I suppose I've seen suffering. Well, my career has been all about suffering. That's what they paid me for, to look after people who suffer. So yes, I agree with that. You see some families who really have more than their fair share. And I don't think there is any answer. And when I say that, I'm thinking of those families where, say, it's illness, like cancer or something like that, which just strikes them and runs through the family. I don't have an answer. I don't think anybody has an answer for that. All I can say is that, sort of personally, just as Louise says, when things hit you once and then hit you again and you surface and then you get hit again, there is that tendency to sort of perhaps ask, why me? They might say, why not? But certainly for me, it has been my Christian faith which has helped me through. And I've certainly been blessed with a real peace, and Louise mentioned that, knowing that God is in control and my future is in his hands. Now, I've had to speak to many patients who have just asked that same question, and I've had to confess, I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. I don't know if anyone else has.
Patty, do you want to add to that, what Raymond said there, or Louise? It's interesting, the person who asked that question has asked the very question which the Bible asks in the Psalms. Why do some people do well in life while I suffer? So although we might struggle with answering that, it's a Bible question. So whoever asked that, their heart intersects with the heart of God. The beginning of the solution, beginning with coming to peace with it, is actually found as you look at the sovereignty of God and his power and his awesome presence.
And we're also encouraged, aren't we, because Jesus didn't give an answer to a similar question when he was asked why all those people were killed when the tower fell on them, and similarly those who were killed by Herod. And then he took the blood and mixed it with the sacrifices. You know, terrible. But what Jesus says, what you need to think about is your own sort of spiritual state. You know, life is uncertain. We need to get our relationship right with God.
Patty, I'm going to ask you this next question. Why does incurable illness affect children?
I mean, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that one either, having lived through it, having had a son who was diagnosed when I was 16 weeks pregnant with a fatal disease, so we knew that he would die shortly after birth. But it was a precious time of carrying him in the pregnancy, and we were very blessed that we had 18 hours with him after he was born. Why did he have that condition where he couldn't live? I don't know, but I do know that God was faithful to help us through that. And I do think that our son was probably loved more in his short lifetime than some people are in a whole 70 years worth of living. And you know, maybe God wanted people to see the value of a life, even a short one. So, again, I don't know, but I can say, having lived through it, I don't fear that as much as I used to. You know, our worst fear sometimes is that something will happen to our children, but God brought us through that, and I can say I don't fear it like I used to.
Thank you. Why does God allow natural disasters? This can cause so much suffering to those involved. Why? Why does God allow natural disasters? Louise, let's ask you that one. We've not heard from you for a moment.
The Bible speaks about a fallen world, about God who created in the beginning a perfect world, and it speaks about the fall when the first men and women decided to turn away from God, and that had consequences for the whole of creation. It talks about the whole of creation groaning, and the fact is that we live in a world that is not as God intended it to be, and things like disease and natural disasters and a lot of the bad things that happen are part of that fallenness. But the wonderful news we have as we read the Bible is that God has a plan and a purpose to put that right, to make a new heaven and a new earth, which those verses in Revelation are speaking about. And in sending Jesus to give us the opportunity to get back into relationship with him, he will ultimately put all things right. But I believe that a lot of that suffering and that brokenness of the world is part of what went wrong when we turned away from God originally, but that actually we have a wonderful hope of a new creation.
Anything you two want to add?
Yep. We were privileged to be in Grenada just a day after the Haiti earthquake, and within the churches there in Grenada, and particularly when we went to, you could sense that the sort of the love and concern. These were poor people, and yet, you know, they were taking up an offering and collecting things and that, to sort of show their love and support for those people in Haiti who obviously had lost so much.
A slight change in tack with this question. Is suffering ever a punishment? Is suffering ever a punishment? Patty, let's come to you and you can answer that first. Very different question.
I suppose sometimes it can be. I mean, you know, if you smoke, you can get diseases from that, and, you know, self-inflicted suffering. But then, of course, you look at situations with earthquakes or with when children suffer, and you think, well, it's, you know, not really a form of punishment there. So I think it's hard to look at a particular case and say, oh, well, God's punishing you for something, unless it's a clear-cut case of, you know, you inflicted harm on yourself and you're paying the price for it.
Yes, I think I agree with Patty. There isn't necessarily already, always, or even ever a direct correlation between, you know, somebody suffering because they've done something wrong. Jesus was asked that very question, you know, about, I think it was a blind man, you know, did this man's parents sin or what went wrong? And Jesus said, no, it wasn't like that at all. Actually, in that case, Jesus healed the man in front of their eyes, and he said that was for God to fulfill his purpose and to demonstrate a miracle here and now. So, you know, that was actually part of a better plan and purpose, and that was just one incident. But I think that it isn't equitable. It's, as we've already, you know, had the question asked, some people seem to suffer more than others with no good reason. It's part of a big question that we don't always understand, and that that's when we have to learn to trust in a God who will ultimately bring all things together and judge with justice and, as I said, renew the world. And I think that's why a wonderful hope to look forward to of heaven, where things will be put right, is what we sometimes have to hold on to when things are hard here and we don't understand.
I'm going to ask each of you to say something briefly in answer to this, because you've all got experienced and helpful advice, I'm sure. God promises to give us grace for today. Any advice how to live in the moment, particularly when you have a serious illness? So just one little bit of advice each to someone who's obviously asking that for a real reason. Okay, time to think.
It's men first, obviously. Yes. You can't can be very difficult because in those situations often you just feel numb. Can be difficult to pray, and certainly as a Christian you rely very much on the support and encouragement of your other Christian friends who pray and encourage you. As you look back, you know, you can see where God's hand has been there strengthening you, lifting you up, and I think you learn a lot from it. Certainly in sense of personal illness, I found, and I've said this before, I found it far easier to cope with that. I had a certain peace about that. I obviously knew what I had, and I knew the prognosis and this sort of thing and what could happen and the complications, but I was given the peace about that. When we lost a granddaughter, that was very hard, and at times still is.
If I could speak personally, having been through times of ill health, as I've already said, I learned some really valuable lessons about just seizing a moment in the day. You know, I defy anyone to say that you can't find one good thing to make you rejoice in a day, whether it's just having a hug with your child, whether it's looking out the window into the sunshine or seeing some flowers, or really simple things that you can rejoice in even in the midst of really dark times. And I think it really sharpened my sense of those things being special. People say when you lose a sense, your other senses, you know, become much stronger to compensate. And I think in the midst of those times when I was very sick, in a lot of pain, really uncomfortable, just being in a hospital room where I could see out of a window and, you know, see the trees or something, I learnt to thank God in those moments and treasure them.
For me, I found it quite helpful to keep going back to God's word and just looking for who God is and what promises has he given me. That was quite helpful. It just took my eyes off myself and the struggle and reminded me that God had a purpose in all of this, even though I couldn't see it for myself.
Yeah. And a very different question. How does God, this is the second last question, how does God help the grieving families of the soldiers who die in conflict? Raymond, let's come to you first on that one, if that's all right.
How does God help the grieving? Well, I think if a grieving families call on God, they can be assured of his help in those situations. I think tragedy in life for the non-Christian usually does one of two things. It either perhaps makes them more sensitive to think about the spiritual reality of life and may turn to God, and then sadly, of course, in others it seems to drive them the other way and make them very resistant to any thought of God. But if they call on God, as we know the psalmist says, and the psalms are very good to read when you're going through difficult times, when you call on God, he is there, he will answer, he will listen, he will strengthen, he will give peace and carry you through those if you trust in him.
So last question, and I'm going to ask it to Patty and then Louise. How should you respond to suffering if there is no happy ending, in inverted commas, like Louise?
I suppose for us, we just kept looking for God's grace and God's hand in things. God helped us in so many ways throughout our son's short life. In a sense, that wasn't a happy ending. I would so much rather be up here saying to you, oh, he was miraculously healed and, you know, he's at home with the babysitter now. But I can't do that. He passed away, much loved as he was. But yet we look back and see just day after day during that time, God faithfully answered so many prayers and helped us in so many ways. Just the fact that he was born alive was a blessing to us, because there was a chance that he wouldn't be. So we had that time with him. There's no easy answer when it's not the answer that you're looking for, that you want. It's, God, it's the wrong answer. But God says, no, this is part of my plan, and there are reasons for it beyond what you know. I mean, as we look back, we can see a little bit more of how he's used our son's life to make people stop and think about heaven. But I think it won't be until we get to heaven ourselves where we perhaps know a bit more of why God designed things the way he did in that. So.
Louise.
Yes, I'm conscious the story that I've told today in one sense is a happy ending because I'm still here, but I don't know what life holds for me, what there is to come. I certainly believe that God's purpose, if you like, in bringing me through certainly thus far has been so that I can share some of my experience and certainly empathise with others. And the fact is I have a very close friend at the moment who is probably terminally ill. She supported me through all I've been through, and things just don't look so hopeful for her, but she's someone that I'm praying for, that I can walk that path with her, because I've walked that path myself. So maybe God's given me a gift of some understanding that I can share. I praise him for the life I have now, but I think I have even more responsibility to live for him and witness for him because of what he's done for me.
So also that phrase, happy ending like Louise. It's only a matter of timing. A week ago, Louise said, Tim, could you sit down and listen to what I'm going to say at Besica next week? So I sat down and listened. And she came out with that phrase that she'd been in for the final visit to for the scan. That was the first time I'd heard of it. So that had just happened. So if this mission and week and together time had been a week ago, we wouldn't have been a happy ending yet. She'd have still been in it. And in reality, we all are, because we're all getting older, aren't we? And the like. I'm going to ask Louise to make the final comment. She can have the last word, and then there's one or two things I'm going to just say, and then back to the musician. So, final word from you, Louise. Once she's done that, we're going to clap and thank all three. It's been quite a privileged moment, hasn't it, hearing from all of them this evening. So, Louise, final word.
I think if I could say just one thing to you, it's to take the opportunity to consider what Jesus has to offer. I think our experience here has been that Jesus offers life in all its fullness, and he really is the way to a relationship with God and a future hope which has meaning and purpose, whether your life is wonderful and everything's going great for you, or whether you're walking a really, really dark path. He is the way and the truth and the life. I certainly know that, and I'd just love to encourage you to give that some consideration. You've got nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose and everything to gain. Come again tomorrow, bring some friends. The advantage of doing a roll-on thing like this evening is it can build momentum. Tomorrow the subject is science. Come on Sunday when we'll be thinking a little bit more about Jesus, his death, his resurrection, and the big impact that has on us and on our world. And you might want to think very seriously about coming and doing Christianity Explored. You don't have to know anything about the Bible. You won't be asked to read out loud, pray or sing, and you can ask any question you want. So these little leaflets are out there for you to pick up, or they're on the table. Pick them up and respond, and take Louise and what she said for her final word there about responding to Jesus to mind and to heart.